Arts Connection, the intersection of faith and the arts in Canadian culture, with your host, Robert White. Now, here's Robert.
Welcome to Arts Connection for Thursday, January 19th, 2012. Well, last September, I had a chance to talk to actor and playwright Ince Choi about the success his play Kim's Convenience had at the 2011 Toronto Fringe Festival, including being chosen as a Best of Fringe pick. I ended the conversation by asking Ince what was next for the play, and his reply was, quote, "During the run, there were a bunch of theater companies in Toronto that approached me. I really can't tell you the details because it's still in negotiations, but there is a very positive future for Kim's Convenience," end quote. Well, Ince is on the phone with us today to tell us what the future is, and we'll be talking with him in a few moments. But first, listen to Fly Robin from Amy Savin's debut CD, Skylines.
At the dawning, such a helpless cry. Oh, they found you, crows of wild eyes. So abandoned, couldn't fight for much. You were dying, till love pulled you out. Healing took long days, been done.
For those who didn't hear our conversation back in September, let's give them a bit of a recap. How did you get into acting and writing?
Acting kind of fell into it. I guess my first inspiration or whatever I'd have to say is my father. He's a pastor of a church, Toronto Bethel Evangelical Church, a church that he planted here in Toronto. It's an immigrant Toronto. It's a Korean church. And growing up, watching my father on stage in front of a congregation telling stories, that was my kind of first memories of any kind of storytelling or performance kind of influence. So I'd say that was like the beginning of my acting career. It's watch my father telling stories. After high school, I applied to York University, got into acting program at York, and then I graduated, and ever since then, I've been acting professionally. Writing began with piano, and it began with songwriting, in fact. It was, I think my earliest memories of not wanting to practice piano, but having to be at the piano for, 30 minutes, an hour every day, and just kind of fooling around, I'd have to play a piece, and I'd play the piece a little bit, and then I'd just kind of make my own songs up, and end up writing songs, and then writing it down. So that was the earliest, earliest memories of me writing anything. And then after that, I got into writing poetry and short stories. And now, this is my first play, my first full-length play that I've written. Mm-hmm.
In terms of writing music and writing poetry, did that sort of help you when you started doing playwriting in terms of helping develop rhythm and understanding sort of the crescendo, decrescendo moments that you need to build in in the playwriting. Did that kind of all fall into place as part of your own writing and experience?
Oh, yeah. Very much so. I think playwriting is, it's such a funny art form. Like, it's not necessarily, like, storytelling is one thing. Writing a short story, like a narrative, that's one thing. But playwriting is, it's more like writing a poem, I think. It's more like songwriting. It's more like a sculpture, in fact, or a collage. Because it's a living art form. It's not necessarily meant to be read. It's meant to be heard, and it's meant to be experienced on stage in front of a live audience. You know, it's kind of like Shakespeare. With Shakespeare, a lot of people, like English classes, I remember reading Shakespeare in English, studying it. And, it was never meant to be read. It was meant to be seen and experienced. So, I don't know. It's kind of I would say writing poetry and writing songs early on really laid the foundation for playwriting in a very practical way. Because with plays, it's not, like I just said, it's not a linear thing. It's kind of a feel thing, mm-hmm. And it's very, scenes have rhythms, and scenes have there's a rhyme to, even if it's everyday language, there's a rhythm to it, and especially because Kim's Convenience is very funny. As anyone knows who's a comic, or even anyone who's not a comic, they know that comedy is rhythm. Mm-hmm. The thing about rhythm to the punchline, or how to set up a joke, or why something is funny is sometimes not as clear, but it has something to do with the rhythm.
For some of our listeners out there who may sort of look at plays and screenwriting and playwriting and screenwriting as the same thing, it's not really. What's the key difference between playwriting and screenwriting?
Well, this is my first play, and I've never written a screenplay.
Okay.
So I couldn't really speak to that with any kind of authority. I think screenwriting, from my limited knowledge, I think screenwriting has a lot to do with visuals. So when you write a screenplay, there's a lot of non-text. Like, there's a lot of scenes and shots that have no one saying anything. It's like, you're trying to create a story, or you're trying to create a rhythm at the same time through visual pictures. So there's a shot of a car that drives by, and that's one shot. There's a shot of, a tree, and then you see the person, and then they talk. So I think there's a lot of visuals. I mean, I just read, as an actor, I've read some screenplays, or I've read scenes from TV shows, and it seems to have less text and more, stage directions or other mm-hmm. shots than scripts, like plays. Most plays. I mean, some plays have a lot of stage directions, like Tennessee Williams or mm-hmm. Gene O'Neill. They have, like, pages.
Yeah.
Pages of meticulous stage directions, and what the window looks like, the teacup, and stuff like that. Hmm. Whereas more modern plays, especially Kim's Convenience, it has very little stage directions because it's more about hearing it.
Well, what I need to do is take a quick break, and when we do, when we come back, we'll continue our conversation with Ince Choi. I'm your host, Robert White, and you're listening to Arts Connection on Faith FM, your inspiration station.
I heard that two can be better, like if I should fall, then you would get my back, yeah. It's true that ever since I met you, you're my peace of mind that's keeping me on track. You make each day brighter than the last, like a candle in the dim. You never hide me, you
warm within the last, like a candle in the dim. You never hide where you're at. You've got my back. You've got my back. Oh, it's just like that. Oh, you've got my back. I won't go alone into this world.
Welcome back to Arts Connection. You've been listening to You've Got My Back from Amy Savin's CD Skylines. I'm your host, Robert White, and we're going to continue our conversation with playwright Ince Choi. Now, Ince, Kim's Convenience was an unexpected hit at last year's Fringe Festival, and you sort of alluded to some of the things that it's going on. What is Kim's Convenience about? What's the basic plot?
Yeah, I've had a bunch of interviews, and people keep asking that question. You know, it's hard. It's hard for me to wrap it up in a nutshell. I mean, I could talk about, I could say that it's about family. I could say that it's about a Korean family and their convenience store in Regent Park in Toronto. But that just kind of gives you, I mean, it gives you a taste of what it's about. I could say that it's very funny. I could say that it's an immigrant story. I could say that it's, you know, it's a story about this man, the father of the family, this Korean man, and him dealing with, you know, the store and the future, his future. But it's, yeah, I've always had a tough time dealing with that question.
Now, one of the things you've talked about in other interviews and even last time we talked, you mentioned that part of this is looking at the prodigal son as one of the themes that's involved in that as well. How did you choose that as part of an underlying theme?
I think I didn't really choose it. It just kind of really naturally evolved. I just began writing scenes. So it was just scenes, and then those scenes kind of created these characters and this family set in a convenience store in Toronto, downtown Toronto. And then the prodigal son story just kind of emerged out of that. I mean, I grew up in church, and I've heard and read the Bible many times. And there's something very powerful about these old ancient stories that almost have a mythic quality to it, or an archetypal kind of quality to them. And there's something very powerful and simple about those stories that I take and that I used in Kim's Convenience. There, you know, it's also based on some truth, not in my experience, but I've had friends growing up who have who have left home. I knew of people that had a disagreement during their adolescence with their fathers or their mothers and ended up leaving home for a time, either to return later or not to ever, at least yet, have a good reconciliation. So it's kind of a hodgepodge of, yes, the prodigal son story, but then also people in my life that I draw from and experiences. Yeah.
One of the things you said is the fact that the theme, the aspect of the prodigal son grew out of what you were doing. And I find that most writers I know, whether it's playwrights, whether it's novelists, a lot of times things just arise in the writing process, that they don't plan a particular direction, they don't plan a particular theme, that their characters sort of take them off in this direction. As you've been working on Kim's Convenience and some of the other things that you've done before, is that something you find happens, that you have an idea, you're developing that idea, and then it just seems to grow from there?
Oh, yeah, definitely. My process of writing, because I'm an actor first, I would say, my process of writing has a lot to do with me improvising scenes. Me, like, I'm at my computer, my laptop, and I start writing. And I write, there's, I don't know, a monologue or a scene, and I start improvising the voices of my characters. And through my improvisation, the scene gets written out, and then the story kind of takes a life of its own. The characters kind of start saying things and doing things that I didn't really plan. I mean, sometimes I do plan, and I say, okay, well, by the end of the scene, the father figure has to be at this kind of state. We need a larger conflict by the end of this scene, and so I have a general map of what I want to do, but then when I start writing the dialogue, it takes a life of its own, mm-hmm. and it doesn't even end up where I thought we would end up, but it goes somewhere else.
Yeah. How much background work do you do? Like, do you do a lot of character studies so you know what your characters are going to be like and what their motivation, where their background, things like that? Or is it just something that you have this idea of who this character is and they grow out of the writing?
You know, that old writers tell me, and I've read it before, you know, write what you know. And you write what you know because then you don't have to do a lot of research. If you know what you're writing about, if you know those characters, you already have all the knowledge you need. So I didn't have to do much research. I just drew from my life, from growing up in the Korean church and the Korean community. And I know all these characters. They're my uncles, they're my father, they're my aunt, we people I meet. So, yeah, that was the research.
Well, we need to take another quick break, and we're going to be right back with our guest, Ince Choi, and we're going to talk about what that future for Kim's Convenience turned out to include. I'm your host, Robert White, and you're listening to Arts Connection on Faith FM, your inspiration station.
He says goodbye, I'll see you tonight, I'll be home a little late. She smiles and waves and says that's okay, I'll be waiting for you, love. But you know she'll be lonely.
Back to Arts Connection. You've been listening to Bigger Houses from Amy Savin's Skyline CD. I'm your host, Robert White, and we're going into that final part of our conversation with Ince Choi. Ince, back when we talked in September, you said that there was a very positive future for Kim's Convenience, and that turned out to be the current run at Soulpepper Theater. How did that whole process come about? How did you get to the point where Soulpepper got involved?
Well, I was part of, as an actor, I was part of the Soulpepper Theater Company for the past 2 years, and so I already had a connection with them. During the Fringe run, and during the success of it, there was a lot of artistic directors from different theater companies that approached me, and they said, let's have a meeting, let's talk about the future of this, because they were all interested in hosting it or being a co-producer on a full-length run. So I met with all of them because I just wanted to see what the options were, and was advised to do so by my friends. And so my friends from Soulpepper came, Albert Schultz and Leslie Lester, Claire Stakaki. They came to see the show and they loved it. They immediately loved it. They had heard about it before because I was talking about it at Soulpepper. And they said, we need to meet. So we met, and our meeting, you know, I talked to my wife, and we saw all the options, laid it all on the table. Well, if we go with this company, it's like this. And every company has their own little, you know, what the deal is. And it seemed to be the best fit with Soul Pepper. I knew them already very well. They were friends. I trusted them. The designer that I was working with for the Fringe, him and I, we were both at Soul Pepper. And the director I wanted to work with, she was also connected with Soul Pepper, Wayne Mangesha, and Lorenzo Savolini. He was a designer that we also wanted to bring on board, who was also at Soul Pepper. So it just seemed like the best fit. And one of the biggest reasons why I went with Soul Pepper was because they were interested in helping me develop it further. Not just taking what I had, but really wanting to give me the time and the people and the space to make it as best as I could possibly make it. So that's the reason why I went with Soul Pepper.
So in doing that, has the play itself changed at all from when it was in the Fringe to what people are going to see if they see it at Soul Pepper?
Yeah, it got a big upgrade. production value-wise alone, if you walk into the theater, you're gonna think that you just walked into a store. Ken McKenzie, who's the designer on it, he did a fantastic job. Like at the Fringe, we had just a counter and an open closed sign pretty much for our set, which is fine for for the Fringe. But at Soul Pepper, you walk in and the whole thing looks like you walked into a store. It looks fantastic. As well, in the script, we made a few adjustments. I knew I didn't want to change that much because it works. The story worked at the Fringe in front of a live audience. And we were like, okay, so this works. How can we make it clearer and better, but not necessarily longer or more?
Mm-hmm.
I've seen other plays at the Fringe that have tried to make the step to a full production, and they've added 30 minutes or an hour, and it just diluted what I saw and what I thought was worked at the Fringe. And I've seen that in the past, so I didn't want to make that mistake. So if you come to the show and you've seen it at the Fringe, it'll be pretty much the same play. The biggest change is a monologue that was originally in the play, but I cut for the Fringe due to time constraints. But I put that back in, and it's a monologue by the father character, and how he reminisces of his friend's store in L.A., in South Central L.A. during the L.A. riots. In America at that time, in New York as well, there was this big, it got heated during the Rodney King trial, 1992, between Korean store owners and the black community. Because it was kind of this weird phenomenon that Koreans could enter into black neighborhoods and set up a store, and their English was, they had the worst English in the neighborhood, but they could do well and successful. And so there was this animosity between the black community and the Korean community, well, the Korean store owners in black communities in America, specifically L.A. and New York. And so in 1992, when the Rodney King trials kind of went nuts and there was a lot of riots and stuff, that conflict kind of escalated. And there's this monologue that Apa tells, which is based on my uncle's experience with his store in L.A. And so that's the biggest change in terms of text.
Have any of the actors changed from The Fringe as well?
Yeah, unfortunately. I mean, I wanted to keep everyone together and keep the same cast. So the family's the same. Father, mother, sister, brother, we're all the same actors. But unfortunately, my friend Andre Sills, who was the actor that originated the role of the customers and of the customer and the policeman, he had another job. He had another contract that he had to honor. That's like he's on stage right now too, performing in another show. So we had to audition for his role, and we found, like, we were really worried because Andre Sills is an incredible actor, and his shoes are big. So we were like, okay, well, let's audition and see who we find. And, you know, the first guy that came, his name's Clay Bennett.
Yep.
He's he's more known for his TV and film work. He's one of the leads on Flashpoint right now.
Yeah, I've seen him on there.
Yeah, and he came out and he wanted to do theater because he wanted something to do something different. He used to do theater in school when he was younger and at church where he grew up in like in the east, you know, like Eastern Ontario. And after high school, he immediately went to film and TV and had great success there. But he really wanted to come back to theater, and this is his actual first professional theater debut, which is fantastic. Anyways, so we auditioned him, and he was incredible. Like, equally as great, different, but as great as Andre Sills. And so we've been just so blessed with him and what he brings to the group and what he brings to the story and those characters that he plays.
I'm just looking at it. We're quickly running out of time. Let's let people know, when is Kim's Convenience being performed at Soul Pepper?
From now, it opens this Thursday, runs until February 11th.
And if people...
Tickets, there's a lot of performances that are sold out already.
Wow.
So you got to get your tickets now.
So what? Where can people get information if they're interested in tickets?
Soulpepper.ca or kimsconvenience.com.
Great. Ince, thanks for your time today.
Oh, you're very welcome.
And thank you for listening to Arts Connection today, to my guest, Ince Choi. Be sure to tune in next week for another look at where faith, arts, and Canadian culture meet. For more information on Arts Connection, email robert@selawministries, that's S-E-L-A-W ministries.ca, or follow us on Twitter at selaw13, S-E-L-A-W-13. For Arts Connection, I'm your host, Robert White, saying good day and God bless.
You've been listening to Arts Connection, a production of Selav Ministries. Be sure to tune in again next Thursday evening at 10, right here on Faith FM.